I'll call the meeting to order. And, of course, we're not in session, so we aren't going to be able to take any action, approve any minutes, or move any bills. But we have been asked by the Capital Investment Committee to send our priorities to them by Friday of this week. So clearly we have to meet today and take a look at all the bills. And at the end of this hearing, every member here at the table has a tan sheet in your packet. And we're going to ask you in the last column where it says your priority to rank order all the projects that we hear today. And then the staff will tally it up. We've done this for the last 2-3 years. And then we will, I'll send on behalf of our committee our recommendations to Representative Hausman and her committee. So if any of you have to come and go, be sure you're here at the end. And I told some of our members who are across the hall doing the same thing in the higher ed committee, except they're making a day out of it because they've got so many projects to hear, to be sure to come back at the end and if you care to register your vote, which I would think we all would want to do. And we're going to hear the projects this afternoon in the same order that they are on this tan sheet. So now that we have our technology fixed, we'll call up the first bill, which is Red Lake. I guess it does it have a number or not? It's a lot of the bills. These are all House File XXXs because we haven't had a chance to be in session to get them introduced. But Representative Saylor, welcome, and please bring up your testifiers. Yes. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We are here today to discuss the bonding needs for the Red Lake School District to finish this project. I feel like I could have a little tape recorder and just hit play again because every year we're making this presentation because the needs at the Red Lake School District have not fully been met as of this date. And we're really wanting to make that completion so that members of this committee and the bonding and everybody else can realize that this school would be completely funded with regard to its capital needs so that it can get on with the business of education. I will just direct just a few comments, Madam Chair, just with regard to, as you mentioned, that the bills all have XXX and there are many other changes with them. Members would note that the appropriation listed here, again, because it was very preliminary, is for $25,168,000. Actually, the number that the district needs is much higher than that to complete everything, and that would be $35 million. However, we are not asking for that today, and I just feel that it's important to mention that to the committee because, again, we want to finish this project, bring it to completion, but the $35 million figure, after visiting with members in bonding committee, with the school district, Department of Education, the number that the district is asking for is the one that the Department of Education has certified, and that number is $25,227,475. Having clarified that, I'll just briefly say that we've been back, you know, many years. We have had some great successes with being able to work with the monies. Red Lake School District has worked with the monies that have been appropriated over the years, and now they actually have their classroom space built, at least with the middle school and the high school. They don't need any more classrooms. What they need is the rest, putting the boiler system together and also putting in those pieces of education infrastructure that allow students to learn with today's technology. And I will let Superintendent Brent Gish speak more to that when he is addressing you. But we're looking for some of those other educational pieces that really pull a campus together to provide adequate learning experiences for these students so that they have the same opportunity that students throughout the state have. One other thing that's very interesting, I was actually at the school yesterday, and we were visiting, looking at some of the things within the school, and I'll just mention a couple of things that I thought, you know, were really pertinent. One is that they've actually put a great deal of thought into looking at not just the educational pieces, but also what they're doing to keep costs down into the future. And one of those, of course, is with energy. And they have put a great deal of thought into already preparing with the parts of the building that have been done already. They have tunnels ready for putting in the wiring and the capacity for using renewable energy should that ever become part of the mix that the school is able to do. And they are pursuing that independently. But whether it would be, you know, wind or solar or some other opportunities, but they're putting that in place now so that it's not a situation where they would come back to the state and say, okay, now we want to do renewable energy, we need some more bonding money. They have thought of that already and I think put some very careful consideration about that. And another thing I just wanted to mention, since we are all so concerned about jobs and making sure that our bonding needs meet our educational and other housing, you know, whatever particular bonding issue it is. But I just wanted to mention that in the last project that the Red Lake School District did, the vast majority, if not all, of their construction people came from Grand Rapids, Duluth, International Falls, Bemidji, right within that area. So providing jobs up in the northern part of Minnesota, which is one of the things that I know we're looking at with this year's bonding requests. So, and they intend to do the same thing again, you know, again, employ locals. Also, there is a 2% TARO, which is basically having as many of the Native Americans building as possible. So it's not just getting people in construction companies from out of the area, but actually working on the, providing jobs right there in the local area. So they will be doing that. Well, I think at this point I will turn it over to Superintendent Brent Gish to continue with the presentation, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Representative Saylor. Superintendent Gish, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for all the past support that you provided to the Red Lake School District over the past 10 years, an amount that approaches $50 million to provide it much-needed facility and classroom space for the children of the Red Lake Reservation. The partial funding that we received in addition to the classroom space has provided an environment here as has become a place of healing for the children and the community from Red Lake. Upgrades and renovations of existing facilities are still needed in the Red Lake Elementary, the Panema School, and the middle and high school. Estimates to complete the project would be in excess of $35 million. However, the request we bring to you today to complete the area of highest need is for the middle school and our high school, with an estimated cost, as Representative Saylor has mentioned, $25,227,475. If approved, the project would include the modernization of five existing heating plants and mechanical systems in the complex, which are now fired by LP gas, an energy source that is brought from Minneapolis-St. Paul, a very inefficient way to get energy. However, that's where we're tied to. The reason why there are five existing mechanical and heating plants is because of the patchwork quilt that we've got for that facility. All of these resulted in an addition and a new plant, and an addition and a new plant, and over the years now we have five, not tied together, not efficient. That has placed a burden on the school district just to keep the mechanical systems and the heating process going. We would also, as part of this project, we would add classrooms to accommodate fifth grade. Fifth grade is currently served in a K-5 setting at the Red Lake Elementary. By bringing the fifth grade into the middle school complex, and then therefore we would have a K-4 a 5-8 and a 9-12 system here, we would actually reduce the overall cost of the project by $4.5 million, and in the process, we would also add curriculum and program offerings that we would not have available at the elementary in the form of science labs, that we have the technology that we've got available. We think it's a win-win. We reduce the overall cost of the project here and yet add academically to our students as we fight to close the achievement gap for our students in Red Lake. We would also add technology labs and media centers and provide infrastructure for doing that so that our kids would have access to the rest of the world through the internet and the latest technology that is available. Currently, in our complex, we have two cafeterias, neither large enough to be able to accommodate the population in our middle and high school, and so we would go under one cafeteria kitchen system, becoming much more efficient. And as a side note, we have, it's more than just a kitchen facility here, we have changed our diet and nutrition in there to address existing needs of our students here, some of the highest rate of diabetes with the American Indian population. We began that a year and a half ago, and we think it's a very successful, and hopefully that we will see those results down the road in healthier individuals and adults and students as well. It would also include upgrading vocational technical classes for students in community education, offering more applied learning, again, as we get our kids involved and engaged in learning, being able to provide for the applied learning opportunities here, we think will keep kids in school, that they will achieve more highly here, you know, greater graduation here, and then moving on to higher ed as well. We would also add district services in one setting. We would move that into this complex, which is a separate facility, so that when a parent comes to school, that it's one-stop shopping, that they go to the central administration, and then they're also able to address any of the student needs that they have in the middle and high school as well. We would complete our life safety systems fully in compliance with all building codes here. Currently, we do not meet code in at least one area, which would be the air quality in our 57 edition, which has unit ventilators and does not meet the current standards. And finally, it would result in a demolition and replacement of the old elementary school, which is now 57 years old. It has reached the state that when the analysis was done, it was cheaper to replace the facility than it was to modernize, as Representative Saylor has pointed out. We have also, as part of this project, we would utilize green technology wherever possible, wherever it was efficient and affordable. This would include roof and wall, R values consideration, ground source geothermal, and as pointed out, the infrastructure is already there. It's just a matter of tapping into this technology. We would also solar and wind source systems that are compatible, and also eco-friendly building materials are all part of the consideration as we would move this project down. But as you are well aware, buildings alone do not make a school. That's what happens within. We have been in a major effort to reform our school and to close that achievement gap. We have adopted state and national standards. That those standards have been added to are the curriculum that we've got, and so the curriculum is compatible with the state and national standards. We have spent an inordinate, about four times what we generate in professional development and the set aside development for all of our staff members, and so that as we invest today here, they will utilize tomorrow and beyond. We have adopted a behavior management system, and there's been a major effort in our school system here to have a safe drug-free environment. The behavior management system that we have adopted has had excellent results in the 2 years that we have implemented it here, lowering the number of behavior referrals, last year we had no expulsions in high school, and it's not like we got soft on behavior here. It's because what we're doing is working here, and the kids are buying into it. And essentially what happens there, students are buying into taking ownership in their behaviors. That's part of the system that we've got. Also, implementing STEM, science and technology, and mathematics and engineering into all areas there as we better prepare kids for tomorrow. I could go on, but suffice it to say that there are lots of good things that are going on in the Red Lake school system here. The completion of this project would help us move forward, implement all of the other the projects that we've got going here, meshing them together here for the betterment of the student population. And again, thank you to the committee for the consideration.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Questions, members? Representative Sales.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and perhaps this would be Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, but I'm looking at the adjusted net tax capacity that is listed on page 7 of the handout that says Education Department of Red Lake Capital Loan. And I'm kind of startled by the numbers that I see on page 7. It says the adjusted net tax capacity per pupil unit is $6.54, and yet statewide it's $6,821.36. Can you explain that, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Swales, the Red Lake School District is an independent school district, just like all of the state's other school districts, but most of the property within the Red Lake School District is reservation property that is exempt from property tax. There's very few pieces of property that are taxable in the whole school district boundaries. And as a result, their tax capacity is quite low.
Thank you, Representative Swales, for pointing that out, because that's why Red Lake is here, that they do need our help. And it sounds like it's a very organized request. Representative Saylor?
Madam Chair, thank you. I would just like to make a little additional comment to Representative Swales, and just to further clarify, the Red Lake School District and the Red Lake Nation actually is different than the other reservations within the state of Minnesota. In fact, they are one of two in the entire country that operate under a different treaty or situation with the federal government and also with the state, you know. So I think all of the things that people maybe know about if they have part of a reservation in their district with any of the other ones, things are different with Red Lake. And in particular, the fact that the Red Lake Nation owns all of the property, so there isn't any tax capacity, is the reason why we come here. And the other reason, you know, it's kind of the two things. One, they don't have tax capacity. And number two is that our state constitution decrees that we offer a equal public education to all students in the state. And for the citizens of our state and country, that's where that comes into play. So I think that those are the two salient points with regard to the funding that are somewhat different than most of the other school districts that we deal with. But I know it's confusing, so I'm glad that you asked that question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Representative Saylor. Superintendent Gish, have a good trip all the way back up, as you had to come all the way down for 15 minutes, and we appreciate that.
I appreciate the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Mm-hmm. The next project is Rushford Peterson. Do we have a representative for this one? No. Okay. Welcome to the committee, and I guess there's no representative with you, so who is the person I should call on first? Is it you?
Yes, you may, Madam Chair. My name is Chuck Ehler. I'm the superintendent at Rushford Peterson, and for everyone here, I'll just give you the location. Our school district is located in the northeast corner of Fillmore County. Fillmore County is in the far southern eastern corner of the state of Minnesota. We are here today to bring before the committee the request for a cooperative facilities grant for our school district. I would refer to the handout that I gave you. It's a one-page handout. It says on the very top in yellow and green, Rushford Peterson Schools, and our current facilities. We currently utilize some of the oldest facilities in the state of Minnesota. The main portion of our building was built in 1906, and it has been determined that it is functionally unable to provide a quality and safe educational environment. Our facilities do not meet ADA guidelines and recommended safety guidelines. We only have space to accommodate and serve only 41% of this year's 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. The flood of August of 2007 exposed structural and environmental issues in our building. And as everyone knows, the greater Rushford area has experienced substantial business and housing loss as a result of that. And we do experience and deal with a high rate of free and reduced rates, and those are listed for there as well. On the inside page, we're confident that a new school is going to provide us with a foundation for a long-term sustainability of our school district and our communities, support for our local business in creating new jobs, attracting new businesses and families. It will provide an economic boost to local and state economies and utilize current low interest rate. Green space, safer access, and age-appropriate learning environments will be provided. There will be increased community involvement and facility usage. There will be new learning opportunities for early childhood through 12th grade and adult learners. And adequate space to meet the changing academic standards of the future. Why we are asking for financial assistance at this time, I'll just refer you to the analysis of the tax impact. We are requesting a $18.5 million new structure, and we're requesting also a $1.3 million renovation project for our middle school located in Peterson. So as you see, the bond size issue there is for a total of $27,305,000, and we are projecting for our cost to be $6.8 million. And we have calculated the market values there for you on our residential areas. And I ask you to take a look at those. Also with me today is Gary Olson from Ehlers and Associates, and he is here with his expertise to answer any questions in regards to the tax impact. I'd be happy to entertain any at this time if you have any before I proceed.
Okay, members, do you have any questions? And before we get done with this one, I'm going to have Mr. Strom go over the Cooperative Facilities Grant Program handout that you should have at your places, members. So, okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Energy efficiencies and issues. Both our middle school and our elementary high school building have issues regarding energy efficiency. Those structures all contain single-pane windows, and exterior walls are poorly insulated. And we have calculated and projected for you so that you can see visually what our annual heating costs are. In 2004-2005, they averaged around $55,000. And as of last year, they were in the neighborhood of $85,000. Safety issues for our school district. The safety of the students is a concern because the school is located on the State Highway 43. This is the main street and the thoroughfare in our town. It's a very busy street, particularly in the morning and the afternoons when students are coming and going from school. This makes it for a dangerous time for our students to cross the street, even with the use and utilization of crossing guards. Students have to cross a residential street to get access to our playground. We have no green space for play for our elementary and recess times. On the back page, on air quality issues, obviously with the age of our structure, we're continually dealing with air quality issues for the school building. We have all of our areas that are tested for carbon dioxide levels, and the middle school, we were not in compliance. However, through extensive remodel of our vent systems this summer, we were able to get near compliance on those. 18 of the 34 areas tested at the elementary and high school exceeded recommended indoor standards. The new unit ventilators installed, as I mentioned, in the middle school have reduced some of those concerns that we have at that facility. The last item we have there is the accessibility issues. Particularly, we are not meeting ADA guidelines. Our elevators are at different areas and different levels of the school. This placement does not provide for easy access to the various levels. Handicap accessibility in the bathroom is not compliant with ADA guidelines. We presently have no sinks in our elementary classrooms. And in the second and third floor at our high schools, we have no restroom facilities. I appreciate the opportunity to bring forth for you our request for a cooperative facilities grant.
Okay,
on behalf of Rushford Peterson Schools.
Thank you, Superintendent Eilers. And Mr. Olson, did you want to say a word, or did you want to just be here for questions?
Madam Chair, I guess I would like to say one thing. If you look at the chart that shows the tax impact down in the middle of the graph, down in the bottom in the yellow, just to put in perspective, with the grant, a $100,000 house would pay approximately $153 for debt service. If you took the median district in the state, just as many would be above as below, that would be about $110 or $111. So even with the grant, they're going to be at a level above more districts than they're below. If without the grant, the $100,000 house, the tax impact would be $522, that would probably be the highest in the state. So just to put you in perspective about what the tax impact is with and without the grant, even with the grant, they're still going to be taxing for debt service at a rate higher than more districts than they are less than. So I just wanted to put that kind of in perspective a little bit.
Thank you. And I think this committee is pretty aware that we haven't done right by debt service equalization. So this is one way to help with that. Mr. Strom, maybe you could, just to refresh all our memories, go over the handout that we have on the Cooperative Facilities Grant Program.
Madam Chair, members, there's a single sheet with two sides on it from the school finance guide, starting at the middle to the bottom of the first page, which is page 45, which explains the Cooperative Facilities Grant Program. That's a program that's been around for 20-some years, but the big change was made in 2007. That change broadened the program from a program that served only secondary facilities and also increased the maximum grant amount fairly substantially and slightly expanded the number and types of districts that could qualify for the grant. Essentially, under the Cooperative Facilities Grant Program, if the state appropriates money, that money goes into the fund to fund those grants, and then it's up to the commissioner through the timelines established in statute to award that grant. Unlike the maximum effort program, a particular project does not have to be named in law in order to receive a cooperative facilities grant program. As I said, the program started in 1987, and if you turn to the second page, you can see that the majority of those grants were made in the first few years after the program was established for cooperative secondary facilities for high schools, and you can see the list of those districts that received those grants from the state. And since 1994, a new grant has not been awarded in the program.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, members, for Mr. Strom or for the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Superintendent, what are your class sizes and what are your projections for future enrollment at Rushford Peterson?
Our current enrollment is at 640 students. That's K through 12, and we've taken that out to the year 2015, and our enrollment is going to remain steady throughout that time period.
Any other questions? Representative Bassey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm intrigued. I was presenting a bill before another finance committee earlier this week, and I think the same county that you're in was coming forward in that committee asking for the state to fund a new county jail.
If I may correct you, that's in Houston County, which is our neighbor to the west.
Okay.
But I think, though, Representative Dabney, I smell a point here of why we should fund education, though. Is that what you're going to say, Representative Dabney?
I could if you give me a minute to come up with the speech, Madam Chair. It was more the question of when does a local project become a state concern? I mean, Hennepin County would never think to come forward and say, you know, the state ought to pay for a new county jail for Hennepin County. But Houston, apparently, if I've got that right?
Yes, and I apologize. Houston is east of us.
Thank you, because yes. The geography wasn't working out
right.
For a second.
I apologize. I'm still relatively new to the area and to the district. So.
Okay.
And if I could get the two of you to go through the chair, we forget all these protocols because we're not officially in session, but that'll make it easier for me. In case you get in a fight, I can referee. And I know who to be quiet. That's a Dabney.
Usually me and Ethan quiet.
That's a Dabney.
So I guess what I'm looking for here, and since you're new, Superintendent, you may not be able to do this as well as others. the history of attempting to pass bond referendums to take care of these issues. I mean, I don't see, I see it's a moderate amount of poverty in the school district. I see it's a stable student population. You've certainly had issues with floods, what's the history on bond referendums? Where, at what point does a local need become a state concern?
Superintendent Eilers.
Thank you. There was a bond issue that was brought before this, before I arrived at Rushford Peterson. That was in 2002, and that was for a one center located in the community of Rushford, and that was voted down rather handedly. The vote was 81% against and only 19% in favor of that. So we are confident that as a result of things that have gone on in our community and efforts that have been made, and in the whole flood recovery process, the fact that we went out in, to our voters this fall and asked for a referendum to assist us with our operation, they were supportive of that. We know that it would be a challenge for us to go back to them, but we are confident that with the state's assistance to the Cooperative Facilities Grant, that they would give strong consideration to moving forward with this building referendum as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the members? Mr. Olson, you look like you had a comment.
I guess the other comment I would make, Madam Chair, members of the committee, is that one of the other issues that probably makes this a state issue is what you talked about earlier, the lack of debt equalization program. That program, when it started back in 92, 93, funded about 10% of the debt service money. Now it's, I think, less than 1% or something like that. So we have a vast disparity among districts being able to build buildings depending on their tax base. Hennepin County has a great tax base and probably could build a $27 million building for a very small tax impact. Rushford Peterson School District has a much smaller tax base, and therefore the tax impact is much bigger. And so I think that has probably a significant impact on why they're here as well.
And, of course, in the members in the New Minnesota Miracle, we do do right by the debt service equalization. So we're waiting a long time for that bill with the economic conditions that we have right now, but that we do know, and we have accommodated for it whenever we get a chance to finally do right by students all around the state. I have one question. That I see that the agency ranked your larger project higher than the smaller one, just because members are ranking everything on here. Could you just tell us exactly what the difference is between the two requests on our sheet? Do you have this sheet right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, the difference is the first request, the larger request, is for the new building in Rushford.
Okay.
The second request is for the remodeling of the other building that's in Peterson.
Very good. There are no further questions. Then thank you, gentlemen, both very, very much.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing our request here this afternoon.
Okay. The third project is Representative Dietrich's bill. And a lot of these bonding projects that we hear in this committee start to be very familiar to us, but this one is a new one. So welcome, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the Education Finance Committee. You are so right, Representative Zeiling. This is new, and it is a new project. And it is something I think that this committee should think very strongly about. And it is the perfect bill to be heard after Representative Dabney's comments about statewide significance. There, I don't think that we have had a bill like this in recent history that has such a strong statewide significance. So, to begin, yesterday I attended the TIES workshop sponsored by AMSD, which was attended by and had a lot of presenters of educational leaders around the state. The focus was online learning. Throughout the day, these educational leaders highlighted the ways that online learning and other tools of technology can transform teaching and learning inside and outside of the classroom. The possibilities to transform our classrooms into the 21st century classrooms are within reach, except for one thing. In the state of Minnesota, we lack the fiber optic infrastructure for a statewide platform in our schools so that every student could have access to a 21st century, high-quality, global education. I could go on and on about the different things that are going on in the different classrooms throughout the state that have this fiber optic connection, but instead of getting that specific, I'm going to just let you look at a commercial here that speaks to what all of the doors that would open or could open in our classrooms with fiber optic connectivity.
Staff tells me in the legislature here we have a very old computer that Mr. Plant is trying to struggle with.
Quite old. It was running fine a little bit earlier when staff loaded it, but I think it's reloading itself.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay, here.
If only there was an IT guy here to help us.
Maybe you have an opportunity for a question before
the... It's going to run again. While it's loading, I'll just tell you this is a very short commercial. It's 30 seconds or so, and I hope that we're able to watch it because it really does just give a quick little window as to how technology can be used in the classroom to open up the world to every student in the state. And for those of you, especially outstate representatives, I think that you have a real clear understanding on how there are technology limitations in the schools in outstate Minnesota.
Here, Ellen Page.
Wow.
When I was a kid, we would just go to the farm. No, seriously, where are you guys going?
The new classroom. See it, live it, share it on the Human Network. Cisco.
That was it. Just a quick demonstration, like I mentioned before, is to make the point that technology has the ability to open up our classrooms to the world. And it isn't technology in and of itself. It is the tools that technology can bring to the teacher and to the students and then affect learning. Another point besides this direct classroom effects is that a lack of a statewide platform prevents data sharing, which can increase productivity and efficiencies in our state. This bonding request provides the funding for capital costs to bring fiber optic connection to almost every school in the state of Minnesota. What we, from the statistics we have gathered, we have reason to believe that currently about half the schools in the state do not have high-speed internet or internet broadband connection. And I want to just make sure that I do make a note is that we currently have an E-rate program that is funded by the federal government that partially funds lines when we are leasing, and this bonding request does not include any of the it only includes the unfunded part of the leasing piece from the federal government under E-rate, and it also allows for the funding of unpaid principal on a capital purchase, which bonding technically by definition does allow for, and that helps another group of school districts. With that, I have brought Patrick Plantier, the technology director for the Anoka-Hennepin School, and I would like to, he wants to testify in favor of the bill.
Welcome. Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Mr. Plant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the K-12 Finance Division. I'm Patrick Plant, Chief Technology Information Officer for Anoka-Hennepin School District, also a member of MEMO, which is the State Technology and Media Organization, and a member of the MET, or the Minnesota Educational Technology Task Force, that did some of the surveying work to come up with information on where school districts are at. Representative Dietrich's leadership on this important issue is greatly appreciated as it brings forward this proposed bill to address the progressively more urgent unmet needs for all students to have equity of access to higher bandwidth capacity in their districts. The bill creates two public school fiber optic infrastructure accounts, one in the general fund and one in the bond proceeds fund for eligible public school fiber optic project capital costs. And just certainly one of the less, frankly, exciting discussions in education, I'm sure, is around fiber optic infrastructure. I hope you'll believe when I give some examples, in addition to those Representative Dietrich gave, of how we use it to affect learning, it becomes more exciting. But I wanted you to understand from just a couple of pictures here, these are real, very substantial capital investments that improve facilities. So these are basically some shots from what are, in the case of Anoka-Hennepin, $3 million worth of investment basically is hooked up between the buildings and the central sites themselves in how the fiber is lit up or made functional in providing high-speed access. Again, things that alter the physical facility itself and are of capital improvement and betterment to the facility. So how would this investment benefit schools? And what I would tell you is it's in virtually every technology use they have. So if that's digital curriculum content access and delivery, if it's podcasts or licensed streaming video, if it's more reliable state high-stakes online test delivery and efficient management, efficient support gains and reduced costs of centralizing services, learning delivery by interactive video, interactive audio, and shared collaboration, more cost-effective low-incident course delivery via shared resources and specialized resources shared between districts, student performance history transferred electronically via student electronic record exchange, and like the Cisco example, global field trips and worldwide student and teacher collaboration. In conclusion, the unstable and inconsistent nature of funding and lack of dependable broadband infrastructure for K-12 education in Minnesota has made effective statewide systemic change and delivery of today's learning opportunities for students extremely difficult and inequitable. Broadband or fiber optic connectivity is an essential part of today's definition of infrastructure and a capital improvement to property. Finally, it's increasingly alarming for the state of Minnesota that as we enter the second decade of the 21st century, we have no plan in place to address this critical need.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just Representative Dietrich.
A couple more points. You all have the legal opinion inside your packet. Deb Dyson of the bonding staff was very adamant that we include this, but I just want to address that head on. There are previous legal opinions that have not allowed bonding for technology, but we have been very careful in this bill to set the parameters of this project to meet the criteria for bonding in the state constitution. Those of us who have been working on this bill, Patrick Plant, myself, and Representative Winkler, fail to see how fiber optic does not fit the constitutional definitions of a bonding, of a valid bonding project. And I was just talking earlier today even to another lawyer, and they said, it's an outdated opinion. Fiber optic should be considered a capital expense or improvement to a building or land. And then in regards to that, I was was very struck by a quote that I keep on my desk, and in regards to the legal opinion that fiber optic might not be considered a capital expense in previous years. And this quote is from Abraham Lincoln, and actually it was in a one of the session weeklies or something like that that we got here. And it's from Abraham Lincoln. He writes, "As our case is new, we must think anew and act anew." And I think it is truly the time that we start acting differently about education funding and what is the basic infrastructure that we need throughout the state. And we think this is a bold, innovative step in that right direction. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? And then we do also have Kathy Wagner here from the department who wants to testify. Representative Swales and Deputy, and then Ward. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's interesting, yesterday Representative Depke and I sat through 6 hours of testimony and bills being presented in the Transportation Committee, and many of the things we discussed were about the statewide rail plan and when it will be fully implemented. I will be 98 years old, and it's pretty discouraging. But one of the things that one of the presenters brought in was a rail that was laid back in the 1920s that is still in use, but they need rails that are about twice as big or 2.5 times bigger in order to carry the weights of the goods that are transported across our state. The analogy that I'm seeing is to an electronic infrastructure. We invested in the interstate system back in the 50s, realizing we needed that in order to get goods and people from one end of the nation to the other. But I do think that this is an important and valid thing. This summer, Representative McFarland and I traveled the state and went to service cooperatives all around the state, and at every point we said, what are the obstacles from keeping you from being able to share services? We talked to cities, counties, townships, and what is needed in Greater Minnesota is broadband access in order to do business in a more efficient way. Our bill that we're hopefully going to be presenting very, very shortly, and we're having a small group meeting on it on Friday morning, but it's going to be looking at one of these very things, not just for school district infrastructure, but having the same broadband access to all units of government, because we think sharing needs to start happening efficiently across all of those layers. I am very supportive of this bill. I wish it were broader. I wish it would have language in it, and we may want to talk further, Representative Dietrich, about how we can incorporate your bill into what we're trying to achieve. But I am so supportive. I have heard firsthand, talking to hundreds of people now across the state at all levels of government, saying this is what is needed. And I really do wish you success with this bill.
We can gain success by your vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question too, based on Representative Swell's comments. But before I ask your question, I just want to say that I think technology is going to be a real savior for us as far as education is concerned, and I do feel very strongly that we need to move forward with technology. But I did want to ask you, because I do sit on the Technology, Finance, and Policy Committee under Sheldon Johnson for the legislature, and we have spent the summer and several meetings on talking about the expansion of broadband and working on that. Could you tell me, are you working with Sheldon so that we're not working at cross purposes? Part of our discussions is definitely bringing broadband to the schools and to the other units of government that Representative Swells talked about. Have you been working with them so that we're not duplicating efforts?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we have not started down that path. I will tell you that I did read this Minnesota High Speed Ultra Speed Broadband Report, and that committee decides to incorporate what this report brings forth, They are suggesting another committee to have just specified speeds by 2015. In my opinion, I don't think our classrooms, our children, our learning can wait. I think I just don't. And so I am taking a much more focused approach, and the reason is, partially is, another reason is because we're dealing with the word bonding, and bonding deals with public infrastructure, and our schools are the most public of public infrastructures.
If I could just
Representative Depke has one more question, and then we'll see the floor to Mr. Plant. Representative Depke.
Yeah, I don't believe that decision has been made yet on that, but I would suggest that maybe you want to talk to Representative Johnson and see where the committee is going on that, and because I think it would make sense that we coordinate this effort, because definitely education is part of it. So I just wanted to let you know, and I believe that the committee is very much aware of the importance of education.
And you know, when you fill out these rankings here, feel free to write notes, such as something like that could be on your notes. Mr. Plant.
Madam Chair, Representative, I just wanted to add that though this is targeted at fixing or correcting the problem, piece of the puzzle within education itself, I'm actually missing right now a meeting in Anoka County where we have been working with the entire public sector, cities, counties, together to collaborate on how we most effectively put projects in place and leverage the costs associated. So just, I can specifically say, and I know it's happening in other parts of the state, that we as governmental entities are working together to bring the projects together and take advantage of cost sharing from them. So.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Depke. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, thank you for bringing this forward. As a greater Minnesota rep, I think it is exciting, to say the least, for those school districts that have this need, and for the students' possibilities of a, you know, futuristic global education, for sure. I just got a couple quick questions. During the presentation, I heard a couple words. Representative Dietrich, you said that almost all places, all schools in the state of Minnesota would be provided with this. What is that? Which ones wouldn't, or why wouldn't they? Or when you say almost, you wouldn't go to every school in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we started talking about the number that should be in this bill, we did a rough estimate with Anoka Hennepin on what it costs Anoka Hennepin to be fiber optic ready, or to have fiber optic connectivity, and then we took it around kind of real general terms, took that around the state, and we came up with the number of $80 million. As Patrick did more work on it, he thought that the bill might even be higher, the number might even have to be higher to get every single school in the state. And so without knowing the exact numbers, we decided to keep it at the $80 million, thinking that that was already quite a hefty number, and so we left it at $80 million. So it would get us a great, phenomenal start, but it would not reach probably every school district in the state. But it is, as you can read in the bill, a grant program that would be administered through the Department of Education.
And I quickly read through the bill, and it says that the commissioner is going to do the forms and the application, and the commissioner will review the criteria for the grant. And that would be my next question is, you know, so is the commissioner going to be the person solely in charge of deciding, you know, who receives the grant and who doesn't based on the criteria that is that the school districts turn in?
Representative Dietrich, yes. Representative Ward, do you?
That'll be fine, thank you.
All right. Ms. Wagner, if you could come up, and maybe Mr. Plank could stay close by, because maybe we'll need you back again. Or we have all three of you there. Very good.
Really close by.
Okay. Welcome, Ms. Wagner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives of the committee. I'm Kathy Wagner. I'm the IT director for the Department of Education, and our position on this bill is officially neutral, but we are working with the legislature. I do want to say that if every district in the state were connected with high-quality fiber optic, it would make our regulatory responsibilities a lot easier, and it would ease the data burden that districts are currently experiencing. That being said, we do have a variety of levels of sophistication with our customers. Some of them are very sophisticated, like in Okehannon, and then we kind of run the range down to very small charter schools with absolutely no infrastructure. So when we build data collection systems and processes, we always have to build for the range because we just can't totally rely on what level of sophistication is out there.
Ms. Baker, I wonder what the would you care to comment on the 1994 Dorsey Whitney legal opinion? And I know the department does work with them for more current legal opinions because we just had one yesterday about the, you know, capturing some funding from the school payments that will be paid back in May, and that was Dorsey Whitney too. So do you have any thoughts about getting a new opinion from Dorsey and Whitney, or do you think that they're correctly interpreting the statute and it's the statute that needs updating?
Madam Chair, I don't have a legal background, so I'm not really able to comment. All I can say is it's a 1994 opinion, and we have been working very diligently to upgrade our old IT systems at the department, and a lot has changed in the last 16, 17 years with regard to technology. So,
thank you. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really more of a comment. I know when my school district, I was on a school board, we brought in infrastructure. And we did it cooperatively with the city because it was much more efficient to come together and work cooperatively financially. Is this going to allow such a thing when it gets included with a bonding bill?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, I'd like to defer that to Mr. Planter.
I'm going to do the same thing.
Maybe just a couple points related to that. It certainly could, and I would certainly advise it. And you really have to look at each local region and what, but in the case of Okanopan, for example, we do have fiber optic in place. That was at the expense of other educational technology needs, but it was the right decision at the right time because it was cost effective for us, and we actually got agreements that our cities and counties can yet use what we put in place mm-hmm. on the front end. This is also not just a rural issue. I talked with Minneapolis Public Schools today. They don't have a fiber network. They can't cost effectively achieve having one just given certain economic realities of the market that we probably don't want to get into today. So there are rural districts that it's unaffordable for. There are urban districts it's unaffordable for.
Yes, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you need this infrastructure? I'm going to sound really naive now. Do you need this infrastructure to connect wirelessly?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative, the two technologies are really complementary, not in any way in contention with each other. A fiber backbone basically is the same backbone that would give high-speed access for online tests, for example, could be used both in the school day and then hopefully to serve the entire community, but I'll maybe stick to families and children as they would expand their learning day from home. And hopefully get low cost Wi-Fi or wireless access to a system outside of the school day. That's part of the discussions we have in place that are happening in Anoka County right now. And I'm sure you've seen there's been a number of articles in the paper on front page the last few days about lack of broadband in Anoka County.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Oh, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In looking at the application itself, does that include charter schools? Because you talk about, you know, school districts can apply to the commissioner.
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton. The issue with charter schools, and I would actually defer this to program finance staff at the Department of Education who deal with bonding. Charter schools, as I understand it, don't own their buildings, typically don't own their buildings, so there are some extenuating circumstances that would have to be examined with charter schools.
Thank you.
But, Ms. Wagner, now that we gave that opportunity after 5 years of building lease aid, those that finally did own the building then would be eligible?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding, but again, I would defer to one of the staff that works with bonding on a regular basis.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Dietrich and testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
All right, Representative Fritz, Faribault Academy. Welcome. I'm glad this is one of those days when your highways aren't all closed.
So are we. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and members, today again we're with the Minnesota State Academies, and I just want to, before I introduce the folks, thank you again for having us, for listening to our proposal. We have a number of things in the proposal, if you take a look at the bill. And they're not ranked, so I just wanted to make that point, and we'll just, if we could discuss those a little more detail. I have my the folks that I have with me to help with that. We still have the new dormitory, the asset preservation, the independent living housing, the technology center pre-design, and then we have a roadway situation over at the School for the Blind, and we'd like to discuss that a little more at length as well. Today I have with me Superintendent Linda Mitchell, and I have the South Central College Financial Director, Ms. Snorek, with me to my left, and we also have Randy back here, who is the gentleman with the State Academies for the Blind in charge of the physical plant. And I'm sorry, I'm skipping the name. Could you give it?
Randy Dirks.
We do have a couple of handouts as well. And I just want to, on my own, mention the independent living housing, and that's this handout, if you could take a look at that. And that was included in the bonding last year up to a point and then was dropped. And this is the reason why we have the South Central College folks with us today, because it's a collaborative effort on the part of the carpentry class at South Central College and our academies. And the reason that it's only $500,000 is because, you know, we own the academies, and that is our land, so we don't have to purchase land. The project is more than shovel-ready. It's been shovel-ready since last year. So we have, Ms. Snark, you can speak to that as well, but I did want to bring that to your attention. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Mitchell.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Superintendent Mitchell, welcome.
Madam Chair and committee members, may I just ask a quick question here? Do you know who we are in terms of the Minnesota State Academies, or would you like me to do the 30-second who we are, what we do, state agency routine?
All right, let's ask. Members, raise your hand if you want the 30-second who are we state agency routine. Yes, a couple people do. We do have some fairly new members on the committee, so please do.
We are an independent, standalone state agency. We are made up of two special and unique schools, the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind and the Minnesota State Academy for the Deaf. We are located in Faribault, Minnesota, just down 35, about 50 miles. We have been in existence since 1863, actually, when the doors opened. The legislature gave a 1,500 land grant to the citizens of Faribault in 1858 for the establishment of these schools, and at that time we had the Civil War, and nothing happened until 1863, but in 1863 the doors opened for about six or seven students who met in Fowler's store in downtown Faribault. And then 3 years later, we had deaf children and blind children together. It didn't work very well. They have a tendency to pick up the negative parts of each other's behaviors. So we had blind children making noise like deaf kids, and we had deaf children mimicking the way blind children walk. That's kind of a nutshell for we decided this wasn't a good deal to have people together, so we separated them, and we have been in Faribault ever since. We will be celebrating our 150th anniversary in 2013, which a while ago sounded like a long way off. However, that's only 3 years down the road. So We provide free and appropriate public education for children who are deaf or blind within the state of Minnesota. We serve children from birth to 21 years of age. We are an extension of the school districts so that children access the academies through the special education process through IEP meetings. It is an agreement with the local district of residence where the child resides, the families, and the academy staff. At this time, we have probably more than 50% of our students on the deaf school campus who have a secondary handicapping disability. They're not just deaf. It may be a learning disability, it may be a physical disability, it may be emotional behavioral disorder. But on the blind school campus, we probably see more like 75 to 80% of our children who have a secondary handicapping condition, and we also have a third of our students on that campus that are multiply challenged, and that is part of our statute, that we do serve multiply handicapped children at the Minnesota State Academy for the blind. Having said that, our enrollment, our numbers that are enrolled have been stable. We have between 50 and 60 children every year at the blind school. We have about 150 at the deaf school. Now, those are not the only kids that we serve. So in terms of services that we provide within the state, we also have summer programming, short-term services, and outreach that we do. So as a total, on an annual basis, we're serving between 400 and 500 children. We do also offer outreach assessments and consultation to school districts and provide that kind of professional consultation to staff in the public school systems. So, having said that, if I might take just another minute of time,
yep.
We do want to acknowledge and thank you for the support that you have given us in the past, and I'll let you know what our asset preservation money accomplished from the last time around. We are delighted to have an updated, I shouldn't say updated, it's finally an actual security system so that, and I even have this one on, we can lock our buildings and have a much more secure campus both for the blind school and for the deaf school. We also use money and finally have all of our buildings fire protected on the deaf school campus. I think there's one that's not sprinkled that's Randy Dirks's power plant, but I do know there are fire extinguishers there, so I think they would be okay. But otherwise, all of our buildings are sprinkled. We did have an office relocation project at the blind school, which has made that building much more secure. I can tell you that was a concern for parents, and so we really appreciate the fact that we've got that done. We have new lighting in the Noise Hall Auditorium, upgrades to our football field with fencing that has been put around that for the deaf school campus, and also improved and got the anchors back in the ground for the track at the blind school. These are all projects that were funded with our asset preservation money. We also were given $200,000 to upgrade Pollard Hall. Pollard Hall is a building on the deaf school campus, and I am thrilled to be able to say that our perseverance has paid off. We opened a collaborative program January 19th of 2010 now with the Volunteers of America, who provide intensive mental health services in a day program for our deaf students who have mental health issues as well as being deaf. We started working on that program in, I think, 2002. So after 8 years, we have the first floor renovated, and we are delighted to say that that program is open. So thank you very much for that. We also received, and I can move into our requests if you would like, the pre-design money for a new dorm on the deaf school campus. To give you a little bit of history from where we have been to go way back in the early 90s, as a state agency at that time, all of the buildings within the state, or all of the, I should say, facilities within the state were rated, and the academies got a poor rating. In essence, we were pretty much given an F and had not had anything done to any of our facilities for many, many years. Throughout the 90s, a great deal of improvement was made so that then the next rating that came out, I guess I would say we got a C, which is average, but was definitely a great improvement. In 1998, we were given $9 million, which helped us renovate the Tate Hall building on the Deaf School campus, which is a historic building, and also renovated the Lyson building on the Blind School campus, and that is the school building. Those were huge improvements for us, and so we really appreciate that. So now to our new dorm. We started asking for money, and that Frechette Hall building has been on our master plan list, and we were asking for money back in 1996, 97, and 98. So it started out being a request for $2 million and became four and became six and became eight. And here we are in our pre-design. I have to confess to some of my ignorance. I am not a construction background person. I'm in education, so I'm a little bit out of my realm. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand. I thought, that building a new dorm would be a pretty comparable cost to renovating Frechette Hall. And I think I can say that we're still pretty close to that in terms of that would be right if it was just the construction of the actual building. What I didn't know was that building construction and project costs are not the same things. So by the time you add in all of the other things that go there, not just the building itself, but what it takes to put a storm water retention pond that would drain for the new site, the demolition of the old building, and the inflation cost for this, which is $1.2 million, it is much more expensive than I thought it would be. So that's how we have come to the number 12.4. Having said that, the other thing that I do want to say about this dorm is that this is a home for children who are in school K through 12. This is not a college dorm. The challenge for us is that these are young minor children away from home, and the balance of providing them safety and security in a home-like environment and still allowing them the opportunity to grow and become independent is a real challenge. So we want them to be able to take safe risks, but we also want them to be safe. This building does include an education center, social areas. We did have a gentleman who came, an architect who came and helped us in the pre-design, who is a gentleman that works with what I would call deaf-friendly environments. And we learned a lot about constructing a facility that would be friendly for those in the environment who cannot see very well or cannot hear very well. So having said that, I guess before we get into other projects, if there are questions about this first one, I would be open to answering any of them.
Any questions, members? Apparently not.
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to add, too, I know that you have toured the facility and toured the campus, and that I invite the new members and all of you anytime, you know, that we can bring you down and tour it. I think you would be very impressed with the campus and the beautiful buildings as they are. But then we could show you also where we have to duct tape the holes in for Frechette Hall, so to keep the cold weather and the snow out.
And Representative Fritz, as you were telling about that, as I'm hearing about Frechette Hall, these names are familiar, but I can't remember if it's the building I'm thinking of, but maybe Superintendent Mitchell can help me out. Is this the one where they had all those pits and everything?
Yes.
Where
yes, it is.
You wonder why they built something like that for students who are blind.
I have to say, Madam Chair, I have to say this. It is a depressing building, quite honestly. And I, you know, no offense to the architects before. I guess that was the style back at the time. It was built in the late 60s. It certainly was not built with supervision of deaf children in mind, and there's too many corners and pathways, but as Representative Fritz was alluding, this is a sad commentary, and I was taking somebody on a tour, but in the fall we have a terrible time with the box elder bugs. The screens fall off the windows. The older boys in the high school were taking duct tape or masking tape around their windows because there were so many box elder bugs coming in that they were bothering them in the night when they were sleeping. So that's what Representative Fritz was alluding to. But the low ceilings, the lighting is poor. There's no ceiling lights. At the time that they built everything, all the light was built into the furniture. So in an environment where deaf children who are dependent on sign language and need to see each other to be able to communicate, it just was very poorly planned. So that's the reason for our request.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, I don't think there are any further questions, so you can go on to the next project.
Okay, and our asset preservation, as I said, we have used, we believe, very wisely the asset preservation dollars that we have been given. We put $4.26 million on here knowing that there's all of this stuff that can be done, and again, I will say if we couldn't get everything, this would be the place that you give us $2 million instead of $4.2 million, we'll do half of what we've got on the list. One of the things that is on there, I want to say it's a generator, but I think it's a boiler. This is Mr. Dirks' area again. Is it a boiler? Thank you. Would be one of the things that we could put off. So in terms of if we were going to prioritize that list of things, that would be one. Having said that, I think they're pretty self-explanatory. And unless someone has questions about that, I will move on to our next collaborative venture.
Hey, I don't see any questions, so why don't you do that?
Our third request, and we actually started working on this one a couple of years ago, but again, a collaborative venture. South Central College is one of our neighbors within the city of Faribault. We do have students, non-traditional students, who attend South Central College from the School for the Blind. I don't believe this year we have any from the deaf school. But, and I'm going to actually turn this part of the history over to Karen because she can tell you about what South Central does with their housing projects.
Thank you. Welcome, and if you could identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. My name is Karen Snorek. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Operations at South Central College. South Central College has been in Faribault since the early 60s. For the past 43 years, our carpentry program has built residential housing in our community and then attempts to sell the housing. As you know, for many years, that was a very easy task to do. However, the past few years with the economy, not unlike any other community in the state of Minnesota, selling a brand new home is very difficult to do. Last year, our carpentry program instructor talked with the School for the Blind, and we started talking about how we could be a partner together. Linda had mentioned the possibility of doing transitional housing, independent housing on their campus. Our carpentry students needed something to build, and we started working together. Our staff have worked together on doing the layout on this project so that it could accommodate four students in the transitional independent living. We have worked with the academy to determine the different types of needs that would be in the independent learning, just like mentioned earlier, the security, the safety, and other lighting issues that would be needed in this project, which is different than our students are used to learning. This is a great partnership. We do have students from the academy at our college on a daily basis taking classes, and it's wonderful to see these students on our campus. This is a student involvement program. Our students would be the carpenters for this project. However, we would still have to hire local union electricians, plumbers to do that type of work. Our students only do the carpentry work. This project was shovel ready last year, and unfortunately it was not funded. And so therefore our students at South Central College this year are concentrating on building a Habitat for Humanity home. for the Faribault community. However, we'd much rather build a larger project like this and not to be able to invest our money into a house that will take us a year or more to potentially sell in the community.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, if I may, I just want to mention here, we serve children from 0 to 21, and the students that would be living in this independent living housing are those students who are between 18 and 21. What we find, and again, all of the students who come to the academies are on IEPs. This is special education. So, for many of the students who are blind, they can do classroom school fairly well. What the challenges that these students face have much more to do with becoming independent, being able to navigate the world, being able to be self-advocates, learning how to do their laundry, how to cook, how to clean, etc., for themselves. What we're seeing is that some of the students have completed their high school coursework. As long as their IEPs are not signed, they are able to continue, which is why we have both traditional and non-traditional students from the academies attending South Central, because they can start taking classes, but they're still being served through their IEP because they're not yet 21 years old. So what we're looking at is an opportunity for students who are able to do the school but have not learned the skills that they need to be independent and live out in the world. This would be an independent living housing structure on our campus separate from our other dorm for K-12. So it's about as unsupervised and yet not just out in the community as we can be. So, and also in this floor plan, we wanted to mention that it is structured or set up so that there can be some time when an instructor can actually work with the students in the kitchen and in the living skills area. So that's just an FYI for more information. And we do have the program set up. That's been part of our frustration. We can't really advertise these traditional and non-traditional programs because until we have a place for the kids to sleep, we don't really want them coming yet. So. Okay.
Okay.
Next.
The last time around, we asked you, and you graciously gave us $100,000 for, and the language that we requested was pre-design for renovation of Mott Hall. We went back, we had architects come, we had some of our state folks come and look at this building, and for those of you who have not been to our campus, Mott Hall is the old, and I will emphasize old, vocational building. Quite honestly, a couple of years ago when one of the legislative groups was touring, they asked how it got in such terrible shape. And I didn't really have an answer except that we had other needs that were competing and it never rose to the top. But having said that, there is an old printing press in the basement from a time when we used to print all of our own materials on campus. There weren't all of the options that there currently are now with technology and the kinds of work that can be done for students who are deaf or are blind. And so when the experts looked at this building, they shook their heads and said, not a good idea to try and make this into a technology center. This building is a big, old building. There were concerns about it not ever being able to, the sound was a problem, access was a problem. And so we did not spend your money, we saved it, and are coming back to say we would like to change the language, give us $100,000 for pre-design for a tech center. Now this can be in addition to one of our school buildings. It does not have to be a new building, but right now we don't have a place to provide the kinds of experiences that, and as an example, our teachers are now being trained, and we are going to start the Project Lead the Way programming. This is experiential kind of science technology for middle school students, and right now the Faribault Public Schools does have this. We have mainstreamed some of our middle school students into this, but we really need to provide it for all of our own kids. So we're looking for a space, and are hopeful that we could use this money to design the structure where we could teach the science, technology, engineering, robotics, the new vocational, I don't like to use the word vocational, but the new options for students. So that's number four.
And last but not least, we have a safety issue, Madam Chairman, that we have included, and this is a great urgency that we bring this before you today.
Well, this is a lot easier for you to understand if you've been there, so I'll try and describe this map. First of all, you can ignore the blue colored lines that go around. That has to do with plots, and we couldn't figure out a way to get those off of there, but you really don't care about them. What you see at the bottom half of the page is the Minnesota Correctional Facility. And for those of you who may not know the history, this used to be, or before it was a correctional facility, it was the state hospital. And the state hospital and the State Academy for the Blind are adjacent to each other. And in fact, we get our steam from corrections yet today. It all goes underground, but we are still connected in that way. Having said that, this bright pink line that is called Highway 298 goes directly through the blind school campus. As you look at the picture, the school building is actually to the left of the pink line across from Sites Field. And Sites Field is our activities, playground, it's where the track is, it's where the bike path is located. That's where our kids go to exercise, play outside after school. The problem is that this Highway 298 goes right through the middle of the campus and the traffic doesn't go slow. Over the years, we have asked the Department of Transportation, can we put a stoplight in, can we do something? Because to say it's dangerous is an understatement, and I'm coming because I don't want this on my conscience. But we couldn't put speed bumps in, we couldn't put traffic lights in, and so we are asking that the road be closed right out in front of the school. There's a intersection there that you can't really see. If you were coming south, you would be taking a left and going on what's called States Avenue, which is the green line that goes around Sites Field. That is currently the way travel comes to the correctional facility and then goes up to master control. What we are requesting or suggesting, and what was recommended to us from the Department of Finance, was that we just ask that the road be vacated because it is a highway. And we can do that, but they also suggested not to request that of them until we were sure we could get funding to change this road, because otherwise there wouldn't be any way for the traffic to get through. What we're suggesting is, and there is currently a road where that yellow line is that goes across there. However, it is not a road that for the deliveries, the semis, the big trucks, the delivery trucks that go through, I believe it would need to be reconstructed so that it could handle that kind of heavy weight-bearing traffic. Now, the little orange line there is the only part that is currently just open grass. And so what we're requesting is that the road be closed through the middle of our campus, that all of the traffic go around, follow the green line, and then for any of the deliveries that need to go around to the back of the prison or for any of the other traffic, now currently the county jail is still back there, that they would be able to use what is now the yellow line and the orange line and then reconnect with the road. So that's the request for funding to do that. We own Sites Field. There is a fence there. If there are trees that need to be cut down or we need to move that back, we are fine with that. We would just like to get the traffic out of the middle of the campus. And if one more thing here, I do want to say, in terms of these rankings, the reason we had this one on here, not because it's fifth in terms of what we're looking at, but I wasn't quite sure if this was going to come from us as a bonding request or if somehow with corrections we were going to ask for this together. I can speak to them in saying that they're not opposed to it. I do understand they don't want to pay for it, and I'm kind of looking at you guys saying, I don't care whose money it is, we need to get this done. So if that becomes the issue, I'm going to be a good neighbor. I don't want to argue about who pays for it. It is just something that needs to be done. So having said that, that's the history behind it. Any questions?
Any questions? We're at the end of the presentation for the State Academy. So any questions on this project or anything?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick question, Superintendent Mitchell. Have there ever been any incidents, accidents, or worse than that, with any of the students crossing that highway? Superintendent
Mitchell.
Madam Chair and committee member, let's just say near misses is as close as I want to get. And part of the problem is that it's not a straightaway shot. My concern is that the traffic goes too fast. Now that the prison corrections is as large as it is, when they change shifts, there's 600 and some people going in and out of there. And because the road curves, when they're going too fast, by the time they would see the kids that are in the crosswalk there, they don't have time to stop. Fortunately, we are so aware of this that we don't let our kids go out there without supervision, so we've got staff with them. But it's been close enough that I don't want to talk any more than that. Having said that, the one thing that I would like to say in closing, and again, thank you for all your support over the years, we've been getting asset preservation all the time. The last time we had funding for any kind of other standalone project was in 2000, when we received $2 million because we had a problem in Noise Hall with mold and needed that to be abated. So at that time, we did have a renovation to the west wing of Noise Hall, which is also a historic building. Since that time, and we appreciate the asset preservation, but since that time, that is what we've been getting every year, $2 million. 1 year, we got $4 million. But, again, we would really appreciate it if we could get our new dorm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, Superintendent. I just wanted to highlight that the amount that we're requesting is under $18 million for all of these, for all five of these important pieces that are in this. And I, too, want to thank you for the time that you have given us and the times that you have visited us. And I do really, truly extend an open invitation to all of you to come to see this beautiful, beautiful campus and the wonderful work that is being done there for our children. I'm very proud of the work that they do. And I just want to also end and highlight with the project of the South Central College carpentry class. You know, we had 10% unemployment in Rice County this last year. We now are at 8, and I have that wonderful school there and the carpentry class, and we are more than shovel ready last year, and this would be a good project for us to help us get our students and our other students together and give them a decent place to live and build. Thank you for listening to us.
Thank you very much, Representative Fritz and Superintendent Mitchell and Ms. Sorek. Thank you very much. And our last project is Representative Winkler and the Perpich Center. Welcome to Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We are going to be brief. I'm with Sue Mackert, the chairman of the board of the Perpich Center. She told me that she had a three-minute presentation, and I suggested she have that. because I think, first of all, you're all familiar with the Perpich Center. You know the good work that they do. You know that I think more than anything, the Perpich Center is an asset that is more than the sum of its parts. from curriculum development, standards development for high schools, the arts high school itself, the library, and information resources it provides statewide. The Purpose Center is a unique asset, and I mean one of a kind, the true definition of unique. The bonding request is meager, $1.7 million, to tear down a building, to put in some dorm windows so that the important functions that the school is engaged in can occur over the summer months and avoid a lot of energy loss in the winter. And then finally, just to put up a storage facility to help deal with the building that they need to take down. So without further ado, I'll pass it over.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Neckert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Winkler. Thank you for your leadership on behalf of the Purpose Center for Arts Education. The mission of the Purpose Center really is, as described, to provide all Minnesota students the opportunity to develop and integrate their artistic and academic abilities to their highest potential. It's why we function with a campus hub that includes the professional development, arts high school, residential facility, and statewide public library. I have included in your packet today two maps illustrating the impact and outreach of the Purpose Center statewide. Being sensitive to the state's economic climate, we have streamlined our requests for capital bonding to address only health and safety and the preservation of state assets. One of the greatest priorities for asset preservation includes new windows for our residential facility. The original 20-year-old windows pose energy, health, and safety concerns. Leakage is also causing some structural damage around the window frame. By installing some new energy-efficient windows, we can sufficiently cool the facility because this great group in the last session helped us provide some level of air conditioning for the hallways, and we can capitalize on that and feel we can cool sufficiently to offer some summer programs for teachers and students, something for which we have ongoing requests, particularly from schools in greater Minnesota. We'd also appreciate support for demolition of a storage building that is saturated with mold and asbestos and where structural supports are dangerously dilapidated. Abatement is not an option. We demolished a building similar a few years ago. I do think, however, that some of our students are befriending the four-legged creatures that are living in that building. Removal of the building also necessitates a third priority, and that is construction of a prefabricated storage facility. We still must house the material that is in the building to be demolished, and for safety reasons, we also need to move other materials that are now stored in classrooms. The dock and roadway repairs have been on the docket for a few years, and they do need attention at some point. The Wellness Center pre-design and Theater Shop pre-design are part of our overall master plan. So with that, we will let you do your work. We appreciate any consideration you give, and I will just reiterate, having spent some time with all of you in the last session, that we remain very grateful to serve you as an essential state agency for arts education. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Ms. Neckert and Representative Winkler. You gave good advice, I think, on the last project here. People like a concise presentation. I have one question. The Wellness Center and the Theater Scene Shop, you mentioned the pre-design as part of the overall plan. But could you just describe these a little more?
I can. The Wellness Center comes about because as a 24-hour program, we do have students that have issues not only with physical education but health, and having places to isolate them when issues arrive with their health concerns is very critical, as well as improving things for physical education. Right now we rent a facility that is not within walking distance that allows students to have exercise and access, and it's just important to provide those things on campus for us. The Theater Scene Shop pre-design, right now we build sets in the hallways, and students are very gracious in walking around places. We also store things in classrooms, and so those two areas, really the Theater Shop pre-design addresses construction, and it also addresses the fact that we do not have anywhere on campus now where we can bring everyone together. And so being able to offer shows to the full student body, being able to use the facility by other school districts and community members that wish to attend things and aren't able to do so. Does that answer your question?
That answers my question. Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You mentioned the air conditioning. I think you mentioned hallways. Do you have students on campus year-round, 12 months out of the year?
No, we do not. We have students in an elongated school. Our school system runs from mid-August to close to the end of June, and the reason for fixing the air in that building is we want to be able to offer summer school programs.
Oh, Representative Epke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was noticing on our quick sheets that the governor has supported two out of your seven requests, but I'm curious as to know why on the Alpha building demolition he supported almost all of it, but he's a few, you know, he's slightly off on that. Do you know what, why is that? Or you might not be able to answer that question, but what do you think he might be eliminating?
Ms. Eckert.
Madam Chair, Representative Depke, I'm not certain why he is off on those numbers. I think that the demolition, when we did a building similar, it did cost quite a bit less. We did, however, obtain all of our numbers and facts from the real estate division, from the Department of Administration, and they're here and might be able to address that, but I am not certain.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I do have one other question. We were talking about the Wellness Center and the cost that you put in there of $49,000, I think it's $1,000, right? Yeah, for the design, do you have an idea of approximate cost of the total project, or you don't know that yet?
Ms. Eckert.
Chair, Ms. Chair, Member Freiling and Representative Depke, we do not. We felt that having the pre-design and being able to really articulate the reasons and the issues from students and staff would be needed before we could really determine the full price.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ma'am.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment, really. Considering the fact that I can't remember a time when it was possible to get as many resources at such low interest rates, labor costs and materials, almost any time I can remember, and considering the fact that many of our school districts throughout the state have been cutting arts education across the board, it seems like this would be the opportunity to bring the Prepperidge Center back up to the level that we would like to see it, and that includes adequate infrastructure. It's a shame to have a building with such a great program not meeting that same standard. So just a comment, Madam Chair. All these things, as long as we remember that we need to protect our state's bonding rate, that's the only concern I have. Otherwise, I'm a very strong supporter of this proposal.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Any closing comments, Ms. Mackert or Representative Winkler?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, this $1.7 million is not going to push us over anything, so you can sleep soundly tonight thinking of that. And my closing request is to rank this project as your top priority or very high on your list.
Ms. Mackert, thank you, Representative Winkler.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you. So, members, now we need to rank order 1 through 16, and I said you could make notes. One note that I am going to make, and I will just throw it out for any of you who would care to make it, on the Cooperative Facilities Grant, if we actually funded that grant program, there would undoubtedly be other requests. So you could separate out Rushford Peterson from the actual Cooperative Facilities Grant opportunity, then they can apply for it. at the department, but so could others. You might remember Representative Cornish, for instance, had Wells that's in similar circumstances. So once, I'm going to adjourn the meeting, actually, and then...
Clarification, I assume you're saying we can only use the number one once.
Representative Benson, unfortunately, and you know, those of us on this committee, I really think all of our projects are more important than a lot of other things that get into the bonding bill. These are education projects, and yes, they provide jobs, but they also provide an education. So we all should be lobbying the bonding committee for, you know, no matter how we rank these, in my mind, they should be higher up than some of the other committees. So I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and when you're done, turn it in to Ms. Patrick. Thank you very much, and meeting is adjourned.